The future. A relentless, desperate wasteland ravaged by nuclear war. With the destruction of the internet and search engines such as Google, accurate information about the past is traded like currency. Two brave travelers are commissioned with the dangerous task of going back through time to gather as much information as they can to find out about the late 20th and early 21st centuries in hopes that a future society may rebuild what was lost and avoid the horror of a smoldering radioactive planet. But there is a catch. The travelers' journey back across eons of time is a one-way trip, leaving them stranded in the past. There's no way to communicate their findings to the future other than burying reinforced time capsules in the ground. In the hopes that one day recordings such as these will be unearthed to provide a glimpse of the world that once was. All right. This is the mission of the crispy coated robots. And it must succeed.
Hey, it's Jim.
And it's Joseph.
And it's George. Welcome to Crispy Coated Robots, episode 193. 193, the films of Ridley Scott.
Wow.
Sir Ridley Scott. So for this outing, the Home Office from the future is interested in the top five Sir Ridley Scott movies. He's an English filmmaker. I guess best known for directing like sci-fi and crime. He's done historical drama, but it's always very atmospheric and this very highly concentrated visual style. Nominated, and I'm not talking about anybody's list here, but this is worth noting, nominated for best director for Thelma and Louise, Gladiator, Black Hawk Down. Never won.
Nominated, but never won.
It's
terrible.
2016 Best Picture, The Martian, nominated, didn't win. So now at the time of this recording, the movie Napoleon has not made it out. So we can't really comment on that. But Joseph might just throw it in there anyway. As his number one. You know, he's allowed to do that.
Yeah. It's pretty good. I'm just saying it's pretty good. You guys can really like
it. He has a bootleg copy already, everybody. It's on Joseph's Plex. So check it out.
That's right.
It's 4 hours and 20 minutes, like the original 1920 version of Napoleon.
I think it
the only person that ever saw reign, that, by the
his
way.
His reign was...
it was shorter. The only person that ever saw that original 1920s Napoleon in the theater was Matthew Stevens. He and I talked about it. I saw it on VHS in multiple watches because I couldn't do the whole 4 hours together. And we got to talking one time and he said he actually saw it in the theater. He went to the Greenway. And I was like, you are insane. Four hours and 20 minutes. And all I can think about now is the story that George shared with us.
About the 2001 thing.
Him urinating in the theater. I'm like, I wonder how many times he urinated in the theater.
So
for
if
that,
you haven't heard that episode, we went and saw in the theater in River Oaks Theater in Houston, Texas. We saw 2001. They re-released it. We wanted to see it again on the big screen, and he just disappears in part of the movie. He's like, I'll be right back, and like 20 seconds later he's there, and I'm like, did you go or what? He's like, yeah, I was in the back of the theater, and the big cup that they give you for refreshment, he had
it was very warm. It was very warm.
Repurposed the cup, you know, so yeah.
R.I.P. Matt.
Let's move on now. That tasty morsel. Let's move on to our second topic.
Yeah, what is the second topic, Joseph?
All things chocolate, or at least it is chocolate is the primary ingredient.
Yes.
That's all they gave us. So, you know, it's a wild card.
Anything you want to do.
Well, let's start. Get chocolate rain ready, okay?
Chocolate rain. let's start with the films of Ridley Scott. So hold on the chocolate rain right now. Number five, Joseph.
Well, you know, all those nominations and all that, there's one that finally won Best Picture, and that is 2000's Gladiator, where he won for Best Picture, but not Best Director. I feel like this is a movie that was epic. You know, George, you sort of mentioned the idea of you know, him sort of creating these just beautiful scenes, you know. Oh, yes. And this one, but I really have to say, what's the driving force of this? Because it, I love this. It's my number five. Obviously, it's on my list, but it has not held up well in the sense of special effects. You know, it was good for its time, but over 20 years later and all that, the special effects, you know, especially that, you know, the whole tiger scene in the arena and stuff like that, you can really sort of tell. But nonetheless, I think what makes this a great picture is the performances he gets out of Russell Crowe and Joaquin Phoenix. Their performances are just amazing. It's great.
Oh, yes.
2000 Gladiator.
It's my number two. Did you know, like at the Cannes Film Festival, they actually booed the movie and they gave it thumbs down, and he stood up, he got up on the chair at the con and said, "Are you not entertained?" Then they all started nice. Clapping for it after that.
Like, after he stabbed a guy in the throat. This is my Padgett, number three. Gotcha. This is my number three. Y'all know actor Jack Gleason that plays Joffrey.
How sweet it is.
Yeah, different. Jackie Gleason. Okay. Joffrey.
Let me tell you something, George.
One of these days,
you're going
George.
To the moon. One of these days, you're going to the Colosseum, George. Oh, yes, that's you right. are. And boom, pow, a fake tiger's going to eat you, George.
So he was inspired. Young Jack Gleason, Joffrey Baratheon in Game of Thrones, he modeled his character after Joaquin Phoenix's Commodus here. Real quickly, what might have been, Mel Gibson was offered the Russell Crowe role, and so was Hugh Jackman. One of my favorite Russell Crowe movies, and it's actually one of Russell Crowe's favorite American movies that he has made. So it definitely makes it Gladiator.
Gladiator 2000. Is George, what's your number five?
My number five is going to go back to 2001, a year later, reported to be one of George W. Bush's favorite films. And this movie is actually shown to U.S. Navy Special Forces recruits to inspire them before they begin their Hell Week of, you know, going into the Navy SEALs. Black Hawk Down. So Josh Harnett, Ewan McGregor, Tom Sizemore, Eric Bana's U.S. film debut, Sam Shepard. But the story is set in the early 1990s, where over 150 elite U.S. soldiers, they're dropped into Mogadishu to capture two top members of this warlord gang. But things fall apart pretty quickly, and they get ambushed by all these Somalians. In real life, 18 American soldiers died in the end, but they estimate the Somalis who died in the battle to be estimated around 2,000. But Ridley Scott, he regards this movie as one of the films that he's most proud of for all of his movies. So
it makes it in. It's my number three. Also, I've talked about this on the show before, how the sound of Black Hawk Down makes it sound like you're in, the bullets are right next to you. It is crazy. The whole soundtrack and just the whole grittiness of it. There's a filter. There's usually Black a Ridley Hawk Scott filter. Sound. Yeah. There's like Ridley Scott filter on this one. It's kind of a really dark kind of, it's got its own unique look. So yeah. My number five is the complete turnabout from 2021. It is House of Gucci, with the true story of the Gucci empire, with, of course, the greatest accents in the history of cinema.
That's the only reason you're Jared putting it on there just to do Paolo this accent.
Gucci. Yeah. Oh, you're like a little mouse. You're just like a little mouse.
Jared Leto.
The Irons, nowhere near being Italian as Rudolfo Gucci. Al Pacino, of course, just, yeah. And then Lady Gaga going full Gaga and full character as Patrizia. And then Adam Driver, also not Italian, is the main Maurizio Gucci. It's all about the Gucci empire. So, and like you said, I think we've talked about this before, George. You mentioned that it doesn't really look like a Ridley Scott film. That's kind of why I like it. It's kind of like Ridley Scott does it. It's got the Ridley Scott action. It's got the pacing. But
yeah, it's a good film.
When it goes back to like the 70s and stuff, it's got a nice little look to it and everything too. And it's told well. Some people could not get over the accents, especially of of Jared Leto and stuff. But I just thought it added to the fun.
I came late to the party on this just because there were other things out. And this is for our listening audience here. For a month, for a solid month, every time I would talk to Joseph and Jim, they would be, it's a little mouse. It's a little mouse. And I mean, just nonstop. And then I finally saw it and I'm like, that's it. He just they've been making fun of that the whole time. And it was
it's just, you don't recognize them. I told you this. The story before, you know, I showed it to my wife and daughter and I was like, you know who that is? And they're like, no, who? And I was like, that's Jared Leto. And they didn't believe me. They were like, no.
On a previous show, he actually fooled Pacino. You know, when he walked in, the first thing they're like, he went up to Pacino and started talking. And Pacino thought he was like a crazed fan or something like that. He's like, no, that's Jared. That's your son.
Mr. Method.
All right. So let's move on now to things in which chocolate is the main ingredient. Joseph, what is your number five?
My number five is chocolate mousse. This is sort of interesting. It was created by French post-impressionist painter Henri Toulouse-Lautrec, the guy that did, you know, all the Moulin Rouge stuff.
Yeah.
John Leguizamo played him in the movie. He's the one that created it. He was a cook on the side. Besides being an artist, he was a cook. And he came up with that. It's delicious. It's basically chocolate fluff. You know, so I like
it's
good mousse.
Pudding. It's more, it's between pudding and whipped cream.
Basically that's what it is, but I really like it. It's good. It's very light. It's normally like, served in like foo-foo restaurants, you know, really sort of nice kind of things. But anyways, chocolate mousse.
Yes. All right, George, what is your number five?
It's a chocolate mousse.
It's a chocolate mousse. Look at the mousse. Look at the mousse.
Real easy, chocolate covered pretzels. Wow. I could have gone with chocolate covered so many things. I just landed on pretzels.
You know, I do that for Christmas every year. For the last 20 years, I make chocolate covered pretzels, George. I will send you some.
Merry Christmas to you.
I will send you some.
Yes.
Make all really good pretzels.
My number five is, we talk about this restaurant many times because I was a waiter there twice. I'm talking about We're talking about Ben against
the legendary. I know what this is going to be. I'm going to go. Look, I'm going to put it on the board.
Chocolate, which was a big hunk of chocolate ice cream, and it had almonds, mini marshmallows, chocolate fudge sauce. Sometimes they would put Twix cookie bars and crumbled Oreo inside, and then
basically
make that
any loose chocolate lying around, they're going to throw.
Yes,
into this
they're
going to
throw it on there, and then of course it's that shell stuff that you get like a Dairy Queen. They put a big shell on it. When I worked at Ben against, I got half off, so I would take my now wife there, and we would go full out appetizer meal and death by chocolate at the end, and it would cost like $10. So it was awesome.
Nice.
So, big spender. And I do that
right before a shift where I have to work till 2 a.m. So bathroom breaks were needed, but not had until 2 a.m. But
did you have mayonnaise on the side?
Yeah. Jeff, the waiter, said, "Thank you, Jeff. Instead of a death by chocolate, would you like some broccoli bites and mayonnaise on the side?" No, I think we want the death by chocolate, Jeff. Jeff, the waiter's become a character on the show.
All right. I think he's in next to the George C. Scott. I think he is the second most impersonated.
You know what? Everybody loves ketchup with their French fries. George, would you like some mayonnaise?
Bravo, you bastard.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to bring some on the side. Wrong, you bastard. Okay. All right, let's move back to Ridley Scott number four. What you got, Joseph?
I've talked about this movie a lot. It's one of my favorite movies because science is the hero in this one, and I'm talking about 2015's The Martian. Wow. Starring Matt
my
Damon.
Number four.
Yes. Love this movie. Now, the reason why, you know, the book is great. The book is really great. It was a bestseller. But I think it, the reason why I have it on my list here is because I really do think Ridley Scott was able to make a vision of what the book was describing. And he did it so well. And the storytelling is exciting, it's thrilling. And you're watching it thinking, this is an action adventure. You know, you're just sort of, if you don't know the story, you're just like, how's he going to figure his way out? And that science, he has to use science. Yes. To work his way out. It's just, it's great. It's science. So that's why it's my number four.
Yeah, this is my number four as well. I had read the Andy Weir novel years before, in 2011 or 12 when it first came out. Even did an online video review at the request of my publisher. So I was skeptical because the way that the novel is written, it's not in a diary format, but it's Mark Watney. So Matt Damon, the story, if you haven't seen it, set in 2035, Matt Damon's an astronaut, Mark Watney, who becomes stranded on Mars after kind of this freakish accident causes the other astronauts to leave the planet and assume he's dead. And so for about 2 years, he has to rely on his ingenuity and wits to survive until he can signal to Earth that he's alive. But I was really skeptical because it is such a solitary thing in the novel, a solitary experience for much of it. But you never feel that way watching it because the way he cuts back to NASA at home and everything. But astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson said this is the most accurate film that he has ever seen in regard to the astrophysics and how Mars would be inhabited. So it makes the canister my number four as well. So
yay, science.
My number four is another science fiction offering from Ridley Scott. Probably the most notable one, probably in the running of the top three for sure. And the first thing that caught my attention as a kid was seeing basically a cracking egg in a trailer that still scare the crap out of you. And the way they had the letters kind of imposed upon the screen to spell out alien kind of grew interested. I remember the summer of 79, when I was a kid, it was like a big giant deal. Sigourney Weaver was on the cover of Time magazine and said that the scares are back. I mean, this is a monster in a can, monster in a box movie, but it plays so well on the science fiction.
Like Jaws, but in space.
And the cast, you got Tom Skerritt, Sigourney Weaver, Veronica Cartwright, Harry Dean Stanton, John Hurt, of course, in the famous
scene. Would you like to say the name of the movie, Jim?
I did say alien. I said when it's spelled out alien in the trailer.
Okay.
It's my number one, Jim.
The great thing is, like John Hurt, he did parody the actual movie in Spaceballs. So that you kind of had this whole, and his line is great too.
Not again.
That's so good. Hello, my darling.
For 1979, it's shot like nothing else either. Just the way the movie looks. We know it's a fake spaceship, but the way they pull it off, it's like it's more impressive to me than Star Wars. Just the way the movie is shot and the darkness and the shadows, especially when the couple jump scares with that cat. That's not but Joseph, what would you like to add?
Well, just that, you know, he borrowed a lot from Kubrick on this one, of 2001 Space Odyssey. He borrowed in the sense of making space believable, but I think he does a better job than Kubrick, because there's a grittiness to it. Yeah. He realizes that there's going to be wear on the ship itself. You know, if it's used, especially the type of ship it is, it's a cargo ship. So he really sort of looked at realistic vehicles and the wear and tear of those. And so when you go in there, I think that adds to the horror, because normally if it's very sterile and all that, there's a separation because you as a normal human being have not been on a spaceship, but you have been, you know, on vehicles that have wear and tear. And that just adds to the authenticity. I'm not saying it right.
Authenticity?
authenticity. Thank you, Jim. I knew there was a word there to it. And this is a classic horror because really, we've talked about this before. The whole first act, you don't know, you never see the monster. You know, you are just seeing the residuals of the monster, the acid and all that, which is just scary as hell. So
I remember the extra scenes they put into the extra movie with like Tom Skerritt and them up in a cocoon with their faces out. I was like, man, that's super creepy.
Nightmares.
But that also, what Ridley Scott knew that young boys would be watching this movie forever on the movie channel. So he threw a little bone to the kids sneaking and watching this movie at the end by having, Sigourney Weaver's character Ripley change into a spacesuit, and then of course that's when the alien attacks and she's into the barest underwear
panties, which is sort of paradoxical because she's also the first female hero. She is like the cinema first female all out, no apologies.
Oh, in the sequel, she's all hero. Buttoned up. I don't think you see cleavage in the sequels, but I mean, the sequels to me, like Aliens, that is it's in the family, but it's an action movie. This is a scare movie. It's nothing like this. And I think this is definitely the best in the series. So
guys, this is my number two. I have some questions for you guys. We'll find out your knowledge of this movie. What was the draft title? Y'all are both screenwriters. What was the original screenplay called?
Geiger thing.
I don't know.
Star Beast.
I'm glad they changed it.
Sort of wish they would have gone for Star Beast because that's total 70s right there.
Jim, Ridley Scott, Sir Ridley Scott, who ended up directing it, he was the fifth choice for director. Who was the original script originally optioned to? What famous director?
I'm going to go with Richard Attenborough.
Robert Altman.
Oh, really? Wow, that would have been
Robert Altman. So he was on fire. It would have
been like MASH.
Yeah, been like MASH. But, hey, we're going to talk over each other. Hey, there's some aliens. What? I couldn't hear you. You're talking. Stop.
Yeah. But so check out our Robert Altman films episode.
Big episode. That's one of the top five of all time.
73 and Songs About Rain. So Ridley Scott did a lot of the handheld camera work, running through the corridors and stuff. He did that himself. But what was the when it came down to casting, Sigourney Weaver was up against one of her college mates at Yale, another actress that went on to do great things. Who was that?
Diane Keaton,
Meryl Streep.
Oh wow, I think it would have been a different movie. I'm glad they got Sigourney Weaver.
Meryl Streep, she was mourning the death of her partner, John Cazale.
Yeah,
at the time of casting. So here's one final: what might have been? Harrison Ford turned down the role of Captain Dallas, Tom Skerritt's role.
Yeah,
in that. So very different movie with Meryl Streep and Harrison Ford in there.
I'm glad that Tom Skerritt did it. It was more realistic Captain to me.
That's what we would have had with Star Beast.
Han Solo just being another that's better. All right, so that one definitely makes it for all of us. So we got four already. We only are into our fourth choices. Let's go back to number four. Things which chocolate is the main ingredient. Joseph, what you got?
Okay. Chocolate lava cake. Now this is one of those delicious treats that is sort of, a commonality, but in the 80s, this was sort of a mutually exclusive kind of dessert that was only for like fine dining. And it comes with controversy, as all great things do, because there's two French chefs, French chef Michael Bross and French chef Jean-Georges Vendichin. Both of them are claiming that they started it. They, one's from France. The other one says one's from U.S. He was doing it in U.S. and all that. Their methods on it are a little bit different, but it comes out sort of the same, which is that, a good sponge cake, chocolate sponge cake that has filling in the middle of it. So wherever you cut it, it sort of bleeds out, lava. If you will. Yeah.
Speaking of alien, it's like
It's delicious. It's one of my favorite things, but it's always one of those things that you have to be careful with it because it's lava cake. And so it's very, very hot. And I don't know if you've ever done this. I've done it because I'm a pig. And whenever I eat the lava cake, I eat it too fast. And I'll take the first slice of it, I'll put it in my mouth and just scorch my tongue like hot pizza. So yeah. That's why it's my number four. It would have been higher, but I do burn my tongue on this.
Too much pain is surrounded
too much
by,
pain. So, yes.
George,
chocolate lava
four?
Cake,
chocolate donuts. I owe it all to John Belushi.
Yeah,
and that commercial. Little chocolate donuts.
Nice.
All right, my number four is another thing I served up at Dunnigan's, and this is my last option. I promise. Brownie bottom pie, which we had to make in the back. If you watch the movie Waiting. That's true. So they give you a nice little chocolate brownie, and then you have to actually go in the back and put the ice cream on it and the hot fudge and the thing. So very popular item.
How many years did you work at Bennigan's?
I did one stint in the humble Bennigan's and for like a couple years, and then I went to the Galleria Bennigan's where I had all the rich clientele and baseball players and famous people. So yeah. Wow. So I'd say all in all, probably about 2 years combined. Maybe less than that. So anyways, maybe it felt like 2 years. There we go. Let's move on now to films of Ridley Scott. Let's see if we can close out the category with our third entries and we'll take a break. Joseph, what you got?
2003's Matchstick Men. I put this one in there because it made it on our Nicolas Cage episode that we did because I think his performance
neurotic.
OCD Tourette syndrome type guy that gets involved with Sam Rockwell. I'm really hoping the office one day asks us to do Sam Rockwell stuff because I think he is just great in almost everything he does, you know, with it. But basically, you know, they come up with this pool filtration scam with it. And it's one of those things that, you know, God, he gets really good performances out of these actors. And I think Nicolas Cage is just brilliant in there. You know, he has a daughter, Alison Lohman. It's played by Alison Lohman. It's one of those things that it treats a mental disorder, you know, with respect and sincerity. Yeah. At the same time, there's a lot of comedic elements to it. So I think it's a great blend. And when you watch it, I feel like you're watching a smart show. You're watching a smart movie. It's not like just playing for dumb gags.
Didn't he like just eat tuna out of the can? Just was his only meal he ate all the time.
He was very, OCD on all this stuff, which made him somewhat like a savant, you know, because he was so like just, you know, rigid on his lifestyle. Yeah. But yeah, it was the tuna fish. You're right. Yeah. So there you go. Matchstick Men.
What is your number three?
It's going to be 1982's Blade Runner. So Harrison Ford plays a cop in the future that's called out of retirement to hunt and eliminate four escaped lifelike humanoid robots who've returned to Earth. But because of its style, 1982, that's the year E.T. and The Wrath of Khan came out. Blade Runner did not do so well that year that it came out. A very poor box office returns. And the movie doesn't intentionally, or rather it intentionally doesn't engage you directly. It's a very passive viewing. But the story is so compelling. But really the reason it's number one on my list here is, are we doing number one?
We're doing number one.
Good Lord. My number two, so it makes it in. Okay. But I'm
oh wow, what a complete destruction of the list. Sorry.
It, what was it your makes number it three, in, making it the fifth my, one, so your number three was, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
But anyway, let me finish. It shaped all the movies that came after it for this futuristic kind of dystopian sci-fi, and it was kind of really it made the genre of, you know, cyber the whole cyber world and everything that you have all these modern sci-fi writers looking back at. So sorry, I only had one left, and
well, I just remember remember Blade Runner Joseph.
My whole list makes it, y'all.
Remember when the whole when the android just kind of like there was this line, and it was like there was one up there, and that android just kind of skipped the line and went to the front, and then did the first thing, and instead of the third thing.
That was I don't mind. Hey, you know what?
That's my favorite part of the movie.
For the first time, I think ever, every single one of my entries made it. So,
well, it made it before the intermission too. Thing. It's made it before the intermission.
Confusion that we were on number one instead number three.
Sorry, yeah. I only had one dance card left. I only had one left
too, but I waited.
No, me too. But so Blade Runner. Gladiator. I'm just gonna
Let me say this about Gladiator. There was actually a stamp made of Russell Crowe in Australia. There's an official commemorative stamp. So there, Gladiator. That's all my right, number three.
My number three was Black Hawk Down. So let's go ahead and take an intermission now. Gee, I wonder what's going to happen towards the end of the show. It could be anybody's game on these Ridley Scott
thing. I think this is when they tune out. They're like, okay, I'm done. Yeah.
Well, they'll stay for the chocolate. Everybody loves chocolate.
Yes, that's all right, true.
This is now Caitlin Presents, and that is Bowling Ball Factory. Okay, Bowling Ball Factory.
A person could do that every day. There's no way.
I didn't even hear it. Like, kind of like, were they punching holes in the balls, or I'm trying to figure out what's going on. Were they buffing them? I don't know.
I think it sounded like it was being buffed.
Okay. All right. And
oiled or coated or something. I don't know.
All right. Let's move on to number three. Things which chocolate is the main ingredient. Joseph,
what let me give you all my whole list and I'll just get out of here.
George is going to skip to number two, three, two, and one.
I'm going to do all three remaining things I have here. So.
What you got, Joseph?
Sorry about that, guys.
We have not agreed on one thing on chocolate, by the way.
That's crazy.
I just want you to know that. With five.
But we have five in Ridley.
Before the break.
We're going to get something on the next three for sure.
Chocolate ice cream.
There we go. That's
my number three. Okay.
So chocolate ice cream. A lot of people don't know this, but it is considered to be the first ice cream before vanilla to be created. Wow. 1693 is when you have records of it being talked about. In 1800, ice cream was a rare exotic dessert enjoyed mostly by the elite, but around a little after, ice houses started up, and so ice cream started to get its popularity. Chocolate ice cream.
Mm-hmm. I thought there was more. You know, there's more coming, but he's a little self-editing there. He's like, I'm not going any further with this. George, what is your number three?
That's my number three.
Oh, wow.
Watch this. Chocolate ice cream.
Okay, there we go. All right, let's see if you can match my number three, which is chocolate cake. Remember that classic Bill Cosby?
That's my number one.
That is great. Gizmic chocolate cake. Of course we can't.
That's right.
because we can't talk about eggs, that anymore.
And milk and
but chocolate cake, it's pretty simple. Basically, you have the chocolate cake. And do you guys like it with, I mean, I like the chocolate frosting to match usually. I mean,
oh yeah.
Sometimes
yeah,
when people put on other stuff.
Boogie on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So chocolate cake makes it in too. So
makes it in.
Quite a comeback here.
We're back on. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Number two, Ridley Scott. Joseph, what you got?
Blade Runner.
George, what you got?
Alien.
All right, mine is Gladiator. So we're back now to chocolate, the main ingredient. And we have number two. Joseph, what you got?
Fudge brownies.
Nice.
Created in 1893 in Chicago, the Palmer House Hotel. It was made at the request by Bertha Palmer, the owner's wife, who was trying to find a treat for her socialite friends when they were attending the Chicago World's Columbia Exposition, which later became, you know, the World's Fair, thing. She requested a cake-like confection smaller than a piece of cake that would be included in boxed lunches. So fudge brownies, there you go.
And is this so, different from fudge or?
Like the just brownies, you know. Yeah, like,
Georgia,
you know,
do you have brownies on your list?
I had fudge. So
okay,
yeah, that's the whole thing.
All right, so George's fudge, your number two, or is that your number one?
Fudge, that's my number two.
Okay, good. I thought you might jump the line again. All right,
so, but chocolate cake's my number one, so okay. I'm done, guys.
What would you like to say about fudge? Anything?
Delicious.
Okay, delicious.
All right, my number two is a chocolate Swiss roll cake. Little Debbie wasn't like inventive or anything, or Little Debbie didn't say, "Oh, I'm gonna make the Swiss roll." And no, it came from a bigger cake that was actually that, you know, if you cut a Little Debbie Swiss roll, it looks like that, but lot bigger. So mine is the chocolate cake roll or the chocolate Swiss roll, the big edition. Now, Little Debbie stole this, but I got to give them credit for the oatmeal cream pie. I don't think there's a bigger oatmeal cream pie.
Oh, yeah.
So good. That people That's what those. I think that we all agreed when we were talking about this in an earlier episode that cream pie that is what turned most of us on to oatmeal.
Yeah.
You know, that was very nice. That's probably
the I one. Have them frequently. Yes.
I had an oatmeal cookie today from Schlotzky's because I like right. oatmeal.
I do the oatmeal this is the raisin from Subway. So yeah, we're totally off chocolate. But
all right. Sorry.
Number one, it's a mystery now. Number one on the films of Ridley Scott. Joseph, what do you got?
Alien.
George, what do you got?
White Squall. No, Blade Runner, 1982.
My number one was one of the later works from 2007. Ridley Scott directing Russell Crowe again, this time with Denzel Washington for the crime movie American Gangster, the real life of Frank Lucas, who pretty much smuggled in heroin from Vietnam through caskets and other ways under the brand Blue Magic. Everything kind of comes together in this movie. Great cast. Denzel is great in it. Josh Brolin is a crooked cop in here. And of course, they're all 70s'd out. Russell Crowe is great in the film, too. Ends up at the end, and this is a true story, ends up defending, getting his law degree and being the cop who arrests Denzel Washington's Frank Lucas and then defends him in court. So pretty wild movie. It's a long movie, but it is good. And it's kind of added too with the great soundtrack by Jay-Z. I just watched it the other day, and everything is, you know, like I said, Denzel is on it, Russell is on it, great team. American Gangster is my number one Ridley Scott movie. So now on to the number one. Chocolate is the main ingredient. Joseph.
My number one is a hot fudge sundae. I really, because this is the thing about chocolate, you know, I love chocolate to death.
What is the thing about chocolate?
Well, what is the thing about chocolate?
It can be a little bit rich. It can be a little bit too rich. You know, like the Death by Chocolate, loved it, but sometimes it was a little too rich. You know,
too rich.
But the hot fudge sundae is perfect because you do have vanilla ice cream in it. That sort of
It's about balance.
Balance, yeah. It's a good balance there, you know, and all that. But really, like having just regular Sunday and then having a hot fudge Sunday, totally two different things there. Yes. It was created, you know, it's sort of funny because everyone's like, where did it come from and all that? It actually came in 1906.
Oh, okay.
I was just walking down the street the other day and everybody turned to me and goes, where does a hot fudge Sunday come from?
Let me tell you, you know, I'm sure you've been, you don't have this thing called the internet. So let me tell you about it. Clarence Clifton Brown, the owner of CC's Brown's ice cream shop in Hollywood, California, 1906, is the one that created, experimented with several hot fudges and all that, hitting the right formula and all that. Basically, what he was looking for is it's all about balance, right? Like George said, it's all about balance. You have the hot and you have the cold on there. And I know, Jim, you've been wondering about this. National Hot Fudge Sunday is actually July 25th.
Wow.
That's the 25th. So
mark the Hot Fudge Sunday. Kids.
Yeah. So there you go.
All right, George, you're number one.
I'm going to go with chocolate cake.
All right. From the kitchen of Seal Kovacic on Thanksgiving and has to be out the whole time.
Playing the mom card here.
It is chocolate cream pie. Chocolate cream pie usually is made. And usually it's not like made from scratch or anything. It's like from Jell-O pudding and all this stuff, but it still tastes really
still
good.
Still good.
And then you have the Cool Whip, which is another kind of pre-created thing. But it's only something that a mom could throw together. She makes it.
Made with love.
She makes it every single Thanksgiving, that with a pumpkin pie. Because one time, I think when I was four, I said, this is pretty good. And now every, you know, the pumpkin pie
gets, I had that.
The pumpkin pie gets pushed to the side. But the chocolate cream pie always gets eaten. In fact, my daughters have taken a liking to it now. So it's usually a race for the leftovers of it.
So should we put processed chocolate cream pie?
No, I don't want to do that much on it. But I'm just saying Seal Kovacic's chocolate cream pie is
nice.
One. So
nice.
Here we go. We are all set up. Ridley Scott is done.
So let's talk about Ridley Scott. The choices we have to choose from: American Gangster, Matchstick Men, House of Gucci, and the ones that we agreed on: Blade Runner, Alien, three-way tie there, Gladiator. By the way, they're making a sequel to Gladiator. He's making a sequel.
Yep.
Which that ought to be interesting.
Take place in modern times, right?
I don't know.
Like American,
I don't know how
Gladiator.
That's
going to
work. yes. The Martian, and finally Black Hawk Down. So those are the ones that make it: Blade Runner, Alien, Gladiator, The Martian, Black Hawk Down. Now for things which chocolate is the main ingredient.
Wait a second. I'm sorry, George. Joseph, what was Blade Runner on your list?
That was my number two.
Okay, cool. I was just making sure because I didn't.
He's fighting for the American Gangster there. So. The chocolate items, we have a match on chocolate ice cream and chocolate cake. What we have to choose from: chocolate covered pretzels, chocolate donuts, fudge, chocolate mousse, death by chocolate, chocolate lava cake, brownie bottom pie, fudge brownie, chocolate Swiss roll cake, hot fudge sundae, and Celia's chocolate cream pie.
The Silk of Archic's chocolate cream pie I'm putting in.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I would like to put in the word process because I do like them.
Okay. That's the way it makes
homemade
it.
Homemade processed.
It's so
the way
good.
We love it.
That's right. It's good.
I think I told you a few years ago, my mother-in-law found out everybody's pie, and then she went and got, and this has been a thing now for a decade, the Comstock can, and then she just puts meringue on it. So she found out, you know, that I like chocolate pie. And so, and you have to eat, you know, oh, aren't you going to have another thing? And it's like, oh, God,
take a bite.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, oh, I got your lemon pie over here, your cherry pie. And everybody's just like, who's going to be the brave one to tell her to stop this madness? But anyway,
this is the first time for Krispy Kreme Robots. This is the seventh time I've used a family members or friends' food item to get in. My first offering was actually Joseph Johnson's mom's gumbo.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that. So before Joseph was even on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm surprised there's not some kind of chocolate sausage cheese balls in here, but
that yeah, just, exactly. Yeah,
stick around for the gross. Christmas yeah. episode. I'm yeah. sure it's coming. That's more of a Christmas delicacy.
Yes.
So we got three. What else are we doing here?
I'm really going to push for the hot fudge sundae.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to interrupt myself here. Okay. We do have one. We're sorry we suck.
I did not agree to that title.
And it starts out with the title of this is Joseph is full of BS.
Oh, I'm
which
already,
is sort of hot. And it's yeah. it's over episode 191, Condiments That Ruin Food. It comes from my wife, Addie Johnson. She says, "Dear CR, Joseph is full of crap." I'm like, "Thank you, honey. I appreciate that." She points out that my favorite steak place, which I mentioned before, is Prime Steakhouse at the Bellagio, a four-star Diamond Award-winning restaurant. It's super nice. And they serve three sauces with their steaks, soy, rice wine, Bernaise, and peppercorn. And she says, and you love the Bernaise sauce. Wow. So when you say arrogantly that you have cheap meat, may I remind you of our $300 bill that we spent last month on Yikes. This piece of meat with it. She goes, please apologize. You embarrass me. So, I'm sorry, honey. I guess I suck.
Wow.
That was so personal, guys.
Hey, I'm impressed that your wife listens to the show.
She did.
Mine never.
No, mine not either. Yeah.
Like we were listening to it in the car. And whenever I said that, she goes,
so she was trapped.
Yeah. She was like, what are you saying? And she starts pointing this stuff. I'm like, I don't remember that. And she's like, you're full of crap. I'm writing a letter. So there you go.
You said, don't get saucy her on the show as like a guest star or something.
Yeah. Said, don't get saucy with me, Bernays.
That's right. Nice, nice.
All right.
Oh, two more. Well, you know what? Brownie's not wrong. So Brownie's in there for brownie bottom pie and fudge brownie. So if you want to choose one of those, like just the regular fudge brownie.
I feel like the fudge brownie covers everything, you know, in it.
Okay. We need one more.
One of the betting is Death by Chocolate's got to make it.
Either this lava or Death by Chocolate. Both are kind of.
Both are there.
I wouldn't say they're gourmet, but they're fanciful. You know what I mean? They're kind of like a little trendy novelty chocolate. Almost.
I'm only going to do it if the waiter offers it to me, Jim. I'm only going to.
Okay. Well, you guys great. Had a nice meal. Thank you for buying the broccoli bites and our Santa Fe Monte Cristo sandwich with, of course, mayo on the side with mayo, French fries. Yeah. I'm glad you tried that. Did you like it? Oh, it was great, wasn't it? Would you like a brownie bonnet pie or Death by Chocolate or possibly, listen to me, hear me out here. Everybody has the Death by Chocolate and the brownie bottom pie. Would you like the broccoli bites for dessert with a side of mayonnaise?
Nice. Death by Chocolate it
We're
is.
We're going Death Thank by you. Chocolate, boys and girls. So we end up with chocolate ice cream, the original gangster right there.
Yeah, that's
ice
right.
Cream. Yeah. Chocolate that's right. ice cream, chocolate cake, Death by Chocolate, fudge brownie, and give my love to your mom, Jim. Processed chocolate cream pie
with the Jello pudding box, and then also double processing.
Thank you.
And what? Nope. There's the third thing. She buys a store bought graham cracker crust from Cuba. Oh, yeah. She just takes the thing out, and there's no crushed graham crackers here. They're already crushed and put together.
That's right. Life is too short to be crushing graham crackers. Yeah. All right, well, we're done, boys.
Yes, crispycoderobots.com.
Episode 193, seven to go to 200. So,
it's amazing. All of our information available at crispycoderobots.com. You can email us like people hitting Joseph at crispycoderobots@gmail.com. And, a lot of merch left there, details on our albums we review, and good stuff. So, just check it out. You know, hey, George, we never mentioned, you know, we started this the first couple episodes and we really kind of fell off. If you would like to be a Patreon of the show. Remember that? We're trying, the funny thing is, like, we, you know, people, there are serious shows where they get like
people do that. Yeah.
George and I were just looking for like snacks.
Oh, like, yeah.
We just want to go buy like one of those big Frito-Lay packs just to have for the show.
Yeah, never happened.
Nobody sent anything.
We weren't asking, like, you know, $5 a month could make you a member. We're like, hey, can you throw us some Skittles, you know, something.
No response. No one wanted to be a patriot of the show.
Nothing at all. But we'll open it back up.
We don't want to pay for this show, so
we'll open it back up. I don't know how we get this done, but yeah.
Do they have a GoFundMe type Patreon page, you know, where we can just sell the total?
We had a Patreon thing until nothing, like, you know, for the first 6 months, nothing happened. So Tom took it back down. It was too embarrassing.
It was amazing, too, because it was online, but we still found trash and gum in there. You know, like people would pass by our Patreon box and throw stuff in, like, electrically. And it's like, why is there gum and trash in here? It's online. It didn't make any sense.
Yeah, still doesn't. Well,
be a Patreon member today.
Yes. Remember,
yes,
there's always tomorrow.
But remember, next time you come in, don't get the fried cheese or the Death by Chocolate. Maybe try the
broccoli. Try to get the carrots and celery sticks with vinegar. Or is that?